From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And wow, I guess we have to start with a little breaking news. Best as I can confirm, on the fly here in many places, Carrie Fisher has died. Star Wars hero, longtime actor, and 60 years old. She, I guess, confirming this morning, the news coming in that confirmation that Carrie Fisher has passed away. You might have heard in recent days that they thought that the heart problems, the heart attack, I think she suffered on an airplane, that all the reports we heard was that she was, you know, resting and was I guess, doing okay. But you never actually know. And the confirmation that Carrie Fisher has died. Wow. And a timely part of the discussion for us, because we are talking Star Wars this hour. And we are talking about a number of issues related to the new Star Wars film. It's called Rogue One. It's in theaters now. We're going to talk about some of the... it's not really controversy if you can try to organize a boycott and totally fail, but white supremacists have tried to organize a boycott because some of the villains in the film are white males and the heroes is a white female and heroes of color and, you know, how dare Hollywood. So there's a little bit of that, and we'll talk about that. We will talk about heroes of color in film and Star Wars' place in that. You're going to hear from J.J. Abrams, who helped with the reboot, his thoughts on that, whether there might even be gay relationships in Star Wars, or whether Rogue One has a gay relationship in it. If you've seen the film, you can weigh in on some of these things, whatever you think. And we got to talk about Carrie Fisher. So let me go ahead and welcome our panel. Willis Brooks is an aspiring actor and a longtime Star Wars fan. Nice to see you here, Willis. How are you?
I'm good.
Tiffany Starpoli is here, broadcast producer and director and Star Wars fan. And since right around the time Carrie Fisher was in the actual films in the theaters.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here. And Eric Stevens is a pop culture writer, Star Wars fan, and host of a Comic-Con panel called Stop Taking My Hand, The Role of Women in Nerd Media.
Well, yeah.
Nice to have you here.
That's always good to be here.
Well, guys, we just have to start with Carrie Fisher. I mean, they told me, I walked out of the studio and they're walking in and they told me the Carrie Fisher news. I guess you guys heard it. When did you guys hear it?
Just in the waiting room.
I read it and had the unfortunate privilege of telling these guys.
Wow.
And we just went numb immediately.
Because, I mean, I thought for the last couple of days, like, you know, we knew she had had the heart attack, but she was supposed
stable.
To be stable, right?
Yeah.
Wow. So Carrie Fisher passing at the age of 60. I'm sure you'll hear her throughout the day on NPR and All Things Considered and various programming. You'll hear a lot more about that. But what I loved about Princess Leia was she was you know, one of the first Star Wars heroes, and she was a heroine, and she was tough. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about the heroines in the Star Wars films now, but Eric, you know, you write about women in nerd culture.
Yeah, I mean,
she was awesome.
In my panel, I do talk about Leia a lot. The movie starts off; she is the princess in distress, exactly the typical princess role.
Episode 4, we're talking
right.
about. Yeah. Okay, and I should say, if you want to talk Rogue One, make sure you let people know if there are any spoilers before we hit any details, because
Thank
I
you.
Do not
yep.
want to be. Tagged with the guy in gotcha. The spoiler.
Got it.
Right. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, so in Star Wars 1977,
yeah.
she starts off as the princess in distress that needs to be rescued, but that is, once they break her out of that cell, she is in charge and she is the one fighting. And she continues then throughout two more movies, and then we see her in The Force Awakens in a slightly less active role. But, you know, she is not someone who needs to be helped out. She is the fighter. She's putting herself on the front lines. And sometimes ignoring orders from people who were trying to get her out of harm's way and rushing in instead.
And Eric, what did she say? Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're our only hope. But it turned out, yes, I mean, Ben Kenobi was sort of a big deal, but she was a big deal too, you know, that
right.
she was a big part of the hope.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to give away spoilers of this 40-year-old movie, but Obi-Wan dies. He doesn't actually do much to help them. She just needs someone to open the door so she can take care of business.
Tiffany, go ahead.
He
guys.
Helps a lot from the spirit realm, by the way. Like, Obi-Wan helps a lot from the spirit
oh, yeah,
realm,
yeah,
by
yeah.
the
he
way.
He was helpful. He was definitely helpful. Tiffany, you know, how do you feel with the news on Carrie Fisher?
I'm devastated by the news. In fact, you know, when she fell ill, my husband and I were talking about what are we going to do? I mean, if she were to die, well, you know, there's more of these movies being made.
Yeah.
And so are they going to write her out? Are they going to kill her off? Are they going to replace her? It's going to be interesting to see where this goes in the franchise. But it's devastating.
Well, I've read that production wrapped on episode 8. So, you know, that film, I think, is at least shot and done with. Mm-hmm. But what were they planning in 9? I have no idea. We obviously don't know what happened in 8. Willis, how do you feel on this news here?
I was very devastated. She was just one of, like, those female heroes, like one of the first that you learn about at a young age. I mean, it came out before I was born, but I've watched them all in every order possible that I was supposed to watch them, from 1 to 7, and then from 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3. I've done it all, and I was just devastated at this news.
But and, you know, to Eric's point, that first film, episode 4 now, opens and you get this damsel in distress, which she quickly breaks out of. And then in a later film, they put her in a metal bikini, which probably probably Hollywood still had to try to take advantage of some sex appeal, but she was still a tough, you know, backside kicking woman,
yeah.
even in chains. So she was always cool and always tough and strong.
I mean, on screen, she used the chain that is holding her to kill her oppressor. I mean, I'm sure there's some sort of imagery that someone with a much fancier degree than I have would like to talk about, but it's...
She's cool, isn't she?
Yes.
And was she still cool in 7, 8, and 9? I mean, it was neat seeing her. She didn't have nearly the same role that Harrison Ford did. Was she still cool?
She was
you?
Still a leader. She always had that about her. She never stopped leading, even though she wasn't always active and on the battlefield as much in later times, but she was constant. Like, people turned to her when
and
things
if you are a really big nerd like me, in the backstory to The Force Awakens, she was a leader in the New Republic, and when the New Republic refused to take military action against the First Order, she split off and they started the resistance. So she gave up her political life basically to go right back into the battlefield.
And to become a general in the resistance.
Right. Yep. Yeah, she was General
Organa.
General Organa. Organa.
Yeah. She'll always be royalty to me.
If you're just joining us, the news that actor Carrie Fisher has passed away at the age of 60. And we were going to talk about Star Wars anyway this hour, so it was a logical place to start there. But if you want to relate some of your Carrie Fisher fandom, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I was going to start with the what I think is the silly but, you know, still real, and I still think we have to own the fact that there's a segment of our population that is upset about the racial identity of the heroes in these films. But before we turn there, let me just ask Eric Stevens one more follow-up, because Eric, you know, you're the host of a Comic-Con panel called The Role of Women in Nerd Media. And how did Star Wars do, apart from Princess Leia and Carrie Fisher's character? Has Star Wars earned respect for elevating women to roles that they are deserving of, and not just subjugating women into sort of cliche roles? How would you say that the series overall has done?
It's kind of a mixed bag, I think. I think Leia is a much better character than Padme is in the prequels, who, you know, just kind of dies because her husband is gone. I mean, there's an argument both ways for her. One of my favorite characters.
She did some battle, didn't she?
I'm
less familiar with the prequels because I saw them and I tried to forget them. But, you know, sorry.
No. I mean, Padme has her moments, but ultimately.
It's mostly
I feel
her
like
frolicking in the forest and in
her
with
ending.
Anakin.
The end of her arc, I think, weakens her character. But one of my favorite characters in all of Star Wars, actually, is Ahsoka, who is Anakin's apprentice in the Clone Wars series, who we meet as a kid, and we watch her grow over the course of, I mean, she's basically a child soldier. She's a Jedi leading troops in the Clone Wars. And Evan has completely lost me.
Well,
he has no idea what I'm talking about.
Is this part of the official canon? I thought the movies were the official canon, and the rest is...
The official canon as it stands now is, we now have 8 live-action movies. There are 2 TV shows, The Clone Wars and Rebels, which is still airing.
And they count?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And any novels that have been released since, I think, January 2014.
All right, so Tiffany's kind of looking at like me, like, yeah. I'm kind of with you.
I'm like you, Evan. I'm sticking with the movies in the theaters, and as far as I'm concerned, the prequels were kind of me.
The 8 films we've seen, how does Star Wars do in terms of, you know, I mean, does Star Wars deserve the reputation for being egalitarian, I guess?
I think it's getting there. I think it's getting there. As far as these last two movies, you've seen like very strong female characters, and now we're starting to see more diversity. But as far as women goes, I think it's interesting. And you know, we're talking a lot about Leia, and I am devastated by her death. But as a kid, as a young woman, I played with my brother and his friends, Star Wars with my brother and his friends, and I always had to play Leia, and that bummed me out. You know, I mean, because I was the girl, I'm going to be Leia, and you know, I didn't always want to be her. Because she was a bit of the damsel in distress, you know? So I liked Endor Leia, you know, when she became, you know, she was actually on the speeder bike and she was getting stuff done. But, you know, so there are points where she was tough. But because she wasn't all the time and she often needed to be rescued, I didn't see that as the most powerful figure. And now you're seeing people in, like, The Force Awakens. You got Rey, who's, you know, she's the tough one. She's the smart one. She's the one who's rescuing people, you know? So it's getting better. It's changing.
Okay, Willis, how do you think the series has done with women?
I think the series has done a phenomenal with women. But even if you don't hold the prequels with that much regard, I think they're the only, like, comparison I can see between today and what's happening in politics and what now. Because Padme, in regard to me, represents, if we were going to make that comparison, she's Hillary. Like, she was Hillary Clinton. This is how liberty dies, with thunderous applause. And then Trump comes in, he's Darth Sidious.
Wow, like, this is a good point.
That's what I would see.
Absolutely.
Like, if I was going to boycott something, I'd boycott clones, Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, because that's the only comparison I can see. I wouldn't boycott Rogue One, because didn't really see any reason to.
Okay, and so the effort at boycotts, and let me just read some of the comments that usually come from people who don't give you their real name online, and they've got Pepe the Frog icons, and you know, but these are real people, and there is actually going to be something called a Deplore Ball, a real life ball to celebrate the next inauguration.
And sounds like a fun place.
Well, what I'm saying is, you know, I think we have sort of pretended that certain white supremacist elements are, you know, just either non-existent or, and I'm not saying they're all of us are mainstream, but they're out there. And so they've tried to create this boycott the film. And here's what one of the online critics wrote. The new films, quote, are going to flop in a big league way. This is not Trump talking, by the way. It's just, this is someone with a Pepe the Frog icon. The new films are going to flop in a big league way. You can push the female heroes as much as you like, but even most women don't find that interesting.
Wow.
And then, yeah. Tiffany, can you
obviously,
you don't speak
that
for
didn't,
all women,
that
did, but...
No, I can't speak for all women, but obviously that wasn't me, even as a kid. I was like, I don't want to be Leia, you know? No, we want to see that we're represented too, and that we're just as smart, if not smarter, and tough, and we can hold the blaster and all of that good stuff.
Well, and here's another critic writing, quote, if you're annoyed by their allegories in Star Wars, then don't watch it. And if you're like me, you'll pirate it at some point and then fantasize about being a stormtrooper.
Interesting.
Or really disturbing.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah.
Because the boycott, the idea is, well, the white males are now the villains. And you've got white female leads and white leads of leads of color, mm-hmm. and therefore it's an anti-white and particularly anti-white male film, and it's a none too subtle effort to, you know, hold the white man in check. I've been reading a lot of this stuff. I've been trying to represent it accurately, and so the boycott's not only working. Rogue One is going gangbusters in theaters, and it's doing great. But go ahead.
Can I bring up the reason I found this fascinating? A lot of this came up because some Star Wars producers for the new Rogue One talked about how historically in the Star Wars universe, the Empire was based on the Nazis, you know, and the rebels were the good guys and they're fighting the bad guys, you know, very similar to the Nazis. And this was a problem for some people and a revelation to many people. And I was blown away that was a shock. Because
obvious.
Like, it was very obvious to the point where, I mean, the original Star Wars movies, the wardrobe was, you know, George Lucas went to the costume designer and said, I want you to base the bad guys on the Nazis and I want the good guys to be like, you know, space cowboys and like U.S. soldiers.
Some of the weapons and props are literally military surplus from the Nazi military.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's so obvious to me, and to the point where I, as a kid, grew up knowing, you know, the Star Wars universe. Then I started learning about World War II and heard the word stormtrooper thrown around. I'm like, ooh, the Nazis had stormtroopers too? No, actually. This universe was modeled after the Nazis. So, mm-hmm.
All right,
why is this surprising to people?
So let's do two things. Let's move as quickly as we can beyond this ridiculous idea about should there be a boycott or, you know, like that it's an anti-white film. But no. I do want to ask if you see any sort of political overtones at all, not saying, anti-white male, but I'm wondering if you see any political overtones in the film. I'll go around the table. Willis Brooks, you're an aspiring actor yourself, yeah. And you're seeing more leads of color. You got Finn, and I guess we're going to get a lot more Finn story, by the way, in the next film.
We are, yeah.
And I don't want to do spoilers.
Yeah.
But, how do you feel about this criticism that it's somehow an anti-white male film?
I don't see it at all. I mean, like I said, that the only political thing I saw was in Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith, but I feel Mace Windu had to go. He went when he was supposed to go, like, according to the story. Anakin had to make a decision. He made a decision. Mace Windu had to go. I didn't see any sort of supremacy there. Lando plays a great role all the time. I don't see it. I think it's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous notion that it's a white supremacist film.
Okay. But how about the idea that Rogue One now is going in the other direction, that it's trying to make it look like all white males are villains and that only the heroes are heroes of color or women?
I struggle to see that as well. I mean, Finn played a great role to me, but I didn't even feel as though he was the main character of that story. It was more about Rey to me and what she did and how she was able to bring the lightsaber back. Is that a spoiler?
That one you can do.
I think you're okay.
You can do that.
She wanted to bring the lightsaber back to Luke. Like, I don't feel as though there's any agenda when I watch these films in that respect at all.
Sure, and Luke is still alive in the Star Wars universe and still, as far as I can tell, a hero.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And, it's interesting. Like, we're talking about, there was a black stormtrooper. He ended up being a good guy.
Yeah.
But if there's one, that means there are other black stormtroopers. That means there are some bad guys who are black. You know? I mean, right? I mean,
exactly.
It's really, like, it is pretty equal. I think what everybody's, what's shocking to a lot of people is that that we're equating, it's just the historical analogy between the Empire, bad guys, with the Nazis, white guys, And so the people have a problem with that. And then it's also, coming in at the same time when we're all trying to bring diversity into casting, as it should, as they tried to do early on. They made the mistake with the first Star Wars, and then someone said to George Lucas, hey, George, why is the universe all white? So that's why they brought Lando on board with the next one, right? And so they've been slowly trying to make the Star Wars universe more representative.
And that takes us into Rogue One. Is, The Force Awakens is 30 years after Return of the Jedi. They basically have a blank slate. The characters, other than the characters who are coming back, can be any race they want. Rogue One takes place in the days leading up to the first movie, which means your cast has to look pretty much like that first movie, or everyone's going to question what happened to all the black guys that they're not in the movie that takes place 20 minutes later.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So that the rebels who, were not in the original trilogy, they have the freedom to make them whatever race they want, where they do not with the Imperials. Grand Moff Tarkin could not come back in this movie as not a white guy.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And brief aside, can we talk about how amazing it was that Grand Moff Tarkin is an actual character and the actor who played him died 22 years ago?
Oh.
It's stunning.
Ugh.
That was amazing.
That was stunning.
He showed the first...
And that's not a huge spoiler, I don't think, because I think it was pretty well known
over.
That at least that the CGI efforts were there for that.
Yeah.
So that I thought
I was amazed. The first shot is him from the back. And he talks. I'm like, all right,
how they're going to do this.
There are voice actors
that's exactly
who can.
What I thought.
There are actors who can sound like him. And then he turned around. And then for the rest of the movie, he's there. And I never thought we were going to see more than just his reflection in the window.
I thought like 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
No,
it, like, it would have been
you
satisfying.
Like minutes
me, but no.
You get like minutes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah
really,
yeah,
really
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, that's great.
All right, before we go back into the politics, Sam and Henrietta has a comment. Go ahead, Sam.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Sam. As long as your radio's turned down, you can go ahead.
So my comment is, and I'll take this off the air because I'm driving, but my comment is, why do they seem to be only limited to having one strong female character? Why don't they have a couple or, several, I don't know. But it seems like no matter what they do, all they can manage is to have one really strong female character surrounded by a bunch of men. I mean, what is that teaching everybody, that you have to be, you can exalt, you know, you can put one person up there, but you can't put more than one, and they can't work together as a team unless they're surrounded by a bunch of men. So, I don't know, maybe you have some insight as to not only the Star Wars universe, but Marvel or DC or whatever, but I can't think of a single example where there's more than one really strong female character working together with another one. And I'll take the comment off the air. Thanks.
All right, Sam, thanks very much.
You know, I have a really great example. I have talked about it sitting in this very chair.
You're going to say Ghostbusters.
I am going to say Ghostbusters. and that had just as much, far more controversy than this, which I also think is unfounded. I mean, we can have as many women as you want in a cast. I mean, that's...
Okay,
that's...
but Ghostbusters is an example that comes to mind. What else, though? Anything else to fill in Sam's question?
What was the it's escaping me right now, but what's the sci-fi movie with the giant arachnids that are attacking Earth, a giant bugs that are attacking? It was kind of a comedy, but it wasn't.
Eight-legged freaks.
No, not that one. It's a different one, but it'll come to me. But in that movie, it was women and men were pretty much on equal. You know, they were all going, you know, joining the army together, and it was very similar. There was no, you know, like more men versus women. It was pretty. On par. So she brings up a great point. Why don't we have, you know, more women? It's because exactly what you said. When you do that, the whole world, you know, freaks out.
Right.
Why do you have that?
As a writer, I can't imagine they don't consider the reaction to the roles. It doesn't need to be an issue, but knowing it is, I understand why they would try to avoid it.
Yeah.
If they know there's going to be one issue, let's try to eliminate having multiple issues.
I think of Jim Cameron's Aliens, you know, and you had Ripley, and you had like this like army of other people, and there's one woman, and she's real tough.
They did all answer Ripley.
Remember that? And Ripley was tough. So it's, you know, you even movies like that, you could only manage two strong women. You can't have a bunch of
stuff. Because I'm struggling to think of an example, too, and all that's coming to my mind is Charlie's Angels, and I'm just like, that's not a good example.
Exactly.
Michael writes to the program, he says, none of you are old enough to remember, but the first interracial kiss on TV was Lieutenant Uhuru and Captain Kirk.
And, Star Trek.
And he says, the network received death threats for airing that. Your mention of the boycott made me want to see this new movie. Mm-hmm. All of the Star Trek series and movies had strong female characters.
Yes, they did.
It's actually interesting, the Star Trek thing, at least I believe, they wanted to avoid that, and the actors intentionally messed up the takes where they didn't do it, so the only usable take is where they kissed.
Wow.
What? Say this again. What happened?
So, Nichelle Nichols and William Shatner would intentionally mess up the takes so that the only footage available to use in that episode is the one where they kiss.
So they couldn't cut that part out.
Right.
Okay.
They changed history.
They did. It is Nichelle Nichols wanted to quit the show, and Martin Luther King told her she needed to stay in it as a representation of a black woman on TV in a positive role.
Wow. Mm. See, this is history I did not know. So, Michael, thank you for that email. And I would say, if you want to fight the boycott, then go see the film. I saw the film yesterday. It was fun. I mean, maybe I should ask the panel what you think of the new Star Wars. Before I get back to the phone calls and questions and comments, I'll go around the room. What did you think, Eric?
I saw it 7 o'clock opening night.
I thought you were going to say you saw it 7 times.
No, I've only seen
7 o'clock.
3 times.
seen it 3 times?
Yes.
Okay.
7 o'clock opening night, and the credits are rolling, and I don't think I moved the entire credits. One, because I'm watching the credits, because I loved last year in The Force Awakens seeing so many, you know, relatively minor crew members coming back from the original trilogy. But there were so many thoughts I had that I couldn't. Moving would have taken away brain power I needed to think about movies. I'm just blown away by it. It is. I don't like to rank a movie immediately after seeing it, but I loved it.
Okay.
I absolutely love this movie. I to the point where in the, you know, throughout multiple times throughout the movie, I'm looking around me trying to going. Do you realize how great this is? You know, and I'm with people who are, you know, they like the movies, but they don't like them like me. And I kept poking my husband going, you do understand how important this is, right? This is very important. This is very cool. Yeah.
I loved it as well. And I mean, I haven't heard Darth Vader's voice. I mean, we don't want to talk about like a leading black guy that's a villain. It's James Earl Jones, Darth Vader. And I hadn't heard his voice in a long time, and that was really like a magical feeling to me.
Yeah, I guess they do have James Earl Jones at it's like 74 or something years old or something like
Is
that
he?
Maybe,
yeah.
But still doing the voice.
Yep.
He has actually come back. He's done Star Wars Rebels, the TV show, a couple times.
You keep going off the
these
movies.
TV shows
I don't know
are
what you're
really
talking
good,
about.
Evan.
Everyone
okay.
talks
right.
about Rebels. We're supposed to see it, Evan. It's supposed to be very, very, very good.
I don't know if
I have to get
enough
on this.
Of a fan. To,
you keep making excuses. You have a 4-year-old. Watch TV with him.
No, he doesn't like Star Wars.
Oh, no.
He's told me this.
Oh, wow. No.
He
need
doesn't.
To change that.
No, it's true. But maybe he'll come around. Lewis in East Rochester on the phones. Go ahead, Lewis.
Man, first of all, it's great to talk to you. I've listened to your show all the time, and I think it's excellent.
Well, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think this is deeper than you're looking at. I think the movie feels like it's a threat to the white man. I think the white man feels like he's ruled the world for so long, but now he's coming down to more equality. So he sees everything as a threat. And I'm a white man, by the way, but I don't feel that way. But I just feel like it's a social issue. It's like every time a white man sees something or hears something, he's always like, oh, if that was a white man talking that way, you know, he'd be in trouble. I think he's, you know what I mean? Are you getting what I'm saying?
Well, stay on the line. Let's let the panel respond. You know, it's what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think it's white fragility. Absolutely.
I understand it. I mean,
I get it.
It's always been about like a quest for power. And yeah, maybe the Sith Lords have always been depicted as white, but it's always been like someone's in threat to their power. They get consumed by that. Someone tries to bring them down. I understand where he's coming from. Like
because every time they see something now, they're gonna get they get defensive. Let's put it that way. They get defensive about it. So it's a small. It's for me. I probably would have noticed it honestly. But in fact, now that you do bring it up, I think I am going to see the movie. I'm not a big Star Wars fan. You know. But now that it's got a social issue to it like that, I'm interested. I want to see if I would have noticed it. You know, I'm going to watch it with that in mind.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, Lewis. Thanks for the phone call. And you will see with the Rebels, Lewis. White males as well. You know, there's white males on all sides in this movie. It is true, but Grand Moff Tarkin is still white.
A woman. Oh, not Grand Moff Tarkin. I was thinking Mon Mothma.
Mon Mothma.
Mon Mothma is a woman. Yeah,
so
you, exactly.
So you've got Mon Mothma,
who first showed up in Return of the Jedi.
Right.
But not one
Just
of those
for people.
Shows.
She wasn't named on screen. I figured people don't know who she is.
Okay. She's less well known as a character, but Mon Mothma is a woman who is in this film. Yes.
Yeah.
Lewis, thanks for that. And I would say, you know, when Lewis says he thinks it maybe goes deeper than this, I think it's an interesting point in that, you know, we're having a little fun with Star Wars this hour. We're not going, this is not one of those shows where we're intending to go super deep on race, but we've done a lot of that on this program recently, and there is a conversation about the fact that throughout American history, throughout world history, for the most part, white males have done really well. You know, Louis C.K. puts it pretty well. You know, I mean, you could build a time machine and go to any year, and things would be pretty good for white males.
If you're a white male.
If you're a white male. And and so what I think what Lewis is saying is maybe a feeling, okay, let's put it this way, Bill O'Reilly on his show on Fox News, was it last week, Megan, or the week before? His talking points memo, Bill O'Reilly, said that he feels that the white establishment is under threat, that he thinks that the liberal left, that the far left, wants to take away from the white establishment. And a lot of people said, Bill, you said that out loud. Wow, that was out loud. And so maybe that's more of where Lewis is going, is that that maybe that feels like a zero-sum game, and maybe it should feel like a zero-sum game. But, Lewis, have fun with the movie, and thanks for the phone call. I'm late for our only break. Megan says yes. That was last week on Bill O'Reilly's show. So let's go ahead and take that only break of the hour. We'll come back with Willis Brooks, Tiffany Starpoli, Eric Stevens. They are all Star Wars fans. We're talking about many issues related to the film. We'll take more of your calls and questions and comments. On a day that Carrie Fisher passes away at the age of 60, Princess Leia, among many other roles, I loved her unapologetically in The Burbs, often considered Tom Hanks' worst movie, but I loved it as a kid. Carrie Fisher was in that. Yes, she was.
I don't think Tom Hanks has ever made a bad movie.
Well, you may be right, see?
Because Tom Hanks is in the movie.
Yeah, well, even The Burbs, my friend, even The Burbs. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll continue after this short break. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections. Have you seen the new designs for roof solar panels from Elon Musk? Supporters say this is the future of solar. It looks cool, aesthetically pleasing. But the critics say that shouldn't be the focus. It should be about the best energy use, the most efficient energy for the most people. We'll have that debate, plus a review of the year in solar and a look ahead Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, talking Star Wars and any of the many issues related to Star Wars, including the passing of Carrie Fisher, political issues, controversies, this weird boycott thing, and more. 844-295-TALK if you want to weigh in. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Gary says, movies with more than one strong woman, Hunger Games with Jennifer Lawrence and Julianna Moore, and the Kill Bill movies with multiple strong women characters.
Oh, sure.
I didn't see any of those, so.
Kill Bill was amazing.
Yeah, Kill Bill was pretty great.
And is Gary correct? Strong, multiple strong women?
Sure.
There?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm a little conflicted on the Hunger Games, but I admit I'm not an expert enough to publicly argue.
I'm not exactly sure about that either. I mean, I felt like Katniss really, she was the strongest, and everybody else fell to her man or woman.
And Katniss was Jennifer Lawrence?
Yeah,
that
was Jennifer Lawrence. Yeah.
Okay. And if you're just joining us saying, how come you are asking for multiple female strong character leads in films, we had a caller named Sam earlier who was just remarking that it's hard to think of too many movies where even where there's one strong woman, that there's more than one strong woman. And so we continue our discussion now, and let me just ask the panel what I kind of brought up earlier. All right, well, let's move past this question on whether Rogue One is all anti-white male and just ask you if you see any politics at all in it, because we just had an election. A lot of people are feeling, you know, that everything is politically charged right now. You know, I'll start with you this time, Tiffany. Any politics in this one?
I think absolutely. I mean, the whole Star Wars saga itself is, you know, modeled after, you know, the rise of Nazi power. And a lot of that has to do with the movies that, Evan, you and I really don't dig are, you know, episodes 1, 2, and 3. But a lot of that is about the rise of the Emperor, you know, who started out as Chancellor Palpatine, and then became Emperor Palpatine, much like Chancellor Hitler became, you know, the dictator that he became.
Supreme.
And in a lot of the same ways, it was modeled after it. So this entire saga is how we break out of that. How do we defeat what became this totalitarian state in the universe? You know, so yeah, it's hugely political, but it's always been political. This is not anything new. You know, so to say we're doing it now, just, you know, for, you know, because we want to, because we want to stick to the white man. No, this is sci-fi.
It's a continuation of the politics you've seen since the beginning.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Willis?
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, it wasn't as easy as that, you know, in real life to take down the Nazi Empire. Didn't just shoot one bullet up the exhaust pipe, but
there was no secret schematic smuggled out or an entire movie made to justify one bad plot decision from George Lucas, which is what Rogue One was. A fun one, but okay, fair enough. Any politics you see, Eric?
A lot, really. What I really liked is, you know, Rogue One shows that the rebels in the original trilogy, the rebels are, you know, it's black and white. The rebels are good and the Empire is bad. But Rogue One shows that the rebels do some things that are bad in order to, you know, get what they need to do. There's one sequence that if you took out the lasers and, well, I guess if you change the stormtrooper armor, it would look like a shot out of like a video about the Iraq or Afghanistan wars. It has to be intentional imagery to show the stormtroopers are coming through on a tank, and there's this band of rebels who would not look out of place on the streets in one of our recent Middle East wars.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, there's no way that they just didn't realize that was intentional imagery.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you think, but so you're surmising that's intentional.
Yeah.
The directors haven't sort of said anything about that, I don't think
they did, but I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. Those are the images that I was conjuring up when I was seeing it. I was like, oh, this is very similar to modern day Middle East. And you're right. Some of these characters were actually making decisions and, you know, that they were personally conflicted and didn't want to do. And I don't want to say anything to give away any spoilers, but it's you could tell that they were making decisions that were very hard for them personally, but they knew the end would meet the goal, you know, that they needed to attain.
Go ahead, Eric.
I mean, it definitely tones down the black and white. Is that the good guys? I wrote about this on a completely different context. The good guys aren't always as good as you think, and the bad. I mean, well, I guess this is still Star Wars. So the bad guys are still really bad, but the good guys aren't always as good as they.
Yeah, the bad guys in this are horrible.
Oh, they're always horrible.
But you're saying the good guys have more layers, such as when there's a moment where, you know, the rebels are deciding, are we going to go after this or not? And this one band of rebels decides we're going to do this. And some of the pilots are basically saying, you know, we haven't always been perfectly shiny citizens, but everything we've done is for the greater good.
Right.
And we're in.
Right.
Is that moment of where they say, we've acknowledged that our records are murkier.
Yeah.
But we think what we're doing is for the greater advanced good. So.
And also they alluded, there's another group of the rebels that broke off, and you get the sense they were the extremist version of the rebels. And the Rebel Alliance rejected them and said, no.
The enemy's necessary rebels.
We don't want to do what you're doing. So, yeah, there's a lot of analogy to modern day times.
That's in the original trilogy, the Alliance is shown as just one big group. And I know this is going to upset some people, but in the Star Wars Rebels TV show, it shows that it's actually a bunch of little rebel cells that over the course of the series are coming together to be the one rebel alliance that we see, except for in Rogue One, this one faction who they're calling extremists.
Mm-hmm.
There was a moment in the film where there was a comment that I thought was, first of all, I thought it was a great line, but I did think it was a little political, or at least what it was challenging people of privilege to get involved. You had Jyn, right? Jyn is the female lead.
Correct.
And you had, what's the name of the guy who sort of shadows her and she doesn't trust because she's worried that he's going to do something bad to her dad?
Cassian.
And she and Cassian are arguing. And Cassian is basically saying, you don't know my background. You don't know what I've gone through. And Cassian says something along the lines of, I don't have the luxury of only just deciding when I want to start caring. You know, he's not telling you everything that's happened in his life, but he's saying something has been so rough that he's been in this fight from the beginning. And he's basically saying to her, you just parachuted into this fight because you've had the luxury of not caring for a while. And now some of us haven't had that luxury. And I thought that was a really strong line because it challenges anybody in the real world that are we living with luxury to only care when things get rough for us? And if that's the case, should we get more involved in whatever cause anytime?
If anyone wants to take that, or if anyone wants to say there are anti-Trump messages in this movie, that is the anti-Trump message.
I don't know if I took that as anti-Trump.
Well, I don't think it's intentional.
Okay, but I can see what you're saying. But I took that as, if you are feeling at all put off by any events, whether it's this election or anything in your life, but for most of your life, you kind of go through it in a place of privilege where you don't have to get involved and get your hands dirty, are you going to do it anyway? Are you going to get involved as opposed to the people who don't have that choice?
Right. That's like, for me, I mean, I talk a lot about gender and sci-fi because I love sci-fi, but for me as a feminist and as an LGBTQ ally, as a white man, I have not had to deal with any of these issues, but I mean, I identify with, or I see the criticism in Cassian's line where this could be a non-issue for me, and I have had the luxury of deciding when I care, and I have now decided that I do, but for my entire life, there was no point where it directly impacted me that it had to be something that mattered.
Wasn't that a good line? I love that line.
That's a good line.
I thought that was, for a series not known for its writing, and you had a dad joke from Darth Vader in this film, that at least was a good line.
Just because Vader doesn't know he's a dad doesn't mean he's not going to make the joke.
It is a dad joke. It really is. I won't tell you what the dad joke is, but it's a bad dad joke from Darth Vader. And one other thing to sort of reflect on before I jump back to the phones, the question on whether there's a gay relationship in this movie. And so I know you. Some of you are looking at me going like, what?
I'm not sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
You had
Tell me.
The so there are there's some articles out there, some discussions, some speculation that the character who doesn't have the Force but sort of is training with the Force, who is who? What's the name?
Chirrut.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm saying it right.
I don't know the names.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
He's amazing. He's blind, but Chirrut and the other guy Baze. With the semi-automatic.
His best friend.
His best friend.
Yeah.
The question is whether their relationship was more than that. The question is whether their relationship was more than that. And J.J. Abrams was asked in March, when this was still in production, if Star Wars itself had gay relationships, if we should expect gay relationships in Star Wars. So he wasn't asked specifically about this relationship, but a lot of people are pointing to this comment from J.J. Abrams, who didn't do Rogue One, by the way, as saying, yeah, maybe it's okay to look into more, and let's listen to what he had to say about that.
I was asked if I could imagine a homosexual character in the Star Wars universe, and my immediate knee-jerk reaction was, of course. Star Wars is all about inclusivity. It's all about unifying us. It makes no sense that that vast, amazing world with a multitude of planets and locales would not include people who are gay. So it was an immediate response to a question that seemed pretty obvious.
Okay, so there's J.J. Abrams essentially saying, you may see gay relationships, and so what? It's a diverse world, it's a diverse universe. And so now people are sort of wondering about this specific relationship in Rogue One, and I have read that the director of Rogue One has said, I'm okay with people speculating. He's not saying yes or no, he's saying, go ahead and speculate away, and that's fine by me. He didn't say no. Mm-hmm. So, interesting, you know.
I mean, that's where we are. These two characters could be gay. Or they could just be two people who've known each other and obviously, you know, love each other as people who've known each other for many, many years. Either, I mean, it doesn't matter either way, but...
Like Chewbacca and Han Solo. I mean, it was like, these are two people who've traveled the universe together.
They, no one ever speculated
they work
they
off
gay.
Of each other.
Right, I mean...
yeah, it doesn't...
You can't see... I think we're safe with Force Awakens spoilers. You can't see Chewbacca's reaction in The Force Awakens and not deny that they love each other.
Right.
Correct.
Right, but it doesn't mean that's a sexual relationship, whereas in this one, in Rogue One, there's been some speculation, and the director's essentially saying, okay, speculate away, that's fine by me.
There is also, this is really just fans talking about what they want, about Finn and Poe in The Force Awakens. I think it's a stretch because they talked for like 3 seconds on screen, but...
By the way, thank you, Tom, for correcting me. James Earl Jones is 85 now.
Wow.
And still sounds great as Vader.
Yes,
right?
He does.
Yes, he does. And Brian writes to me on Twitter and says, never thought you'd be the one to let me know Carrie Fisher died. I didn't have my phone with me. Heard it on your show. So sad. It is. Yeah. And if you're just joining us, Carrie Fisher, the confirmation coming today that she has passed away at the age of 60. Let's go back to the phones. We'll get Will in Rochester first up. Go ahead, Will.
Hey, how's it going? Long time, first time.
We love long time, first times. This hour has brought several. That's great. Go ahead, Will.
Hey, I just think you guys are dead on with what you're saying, and I think especially talking about the speculation of a gay relationship, if you look back at when the first Star Wars was released, I mean, can you imagine the difference in a director's response to... you know, just speculation. I mean, how cool is that to say? There would have been outrage, you know? And the director would have had to say, well, I would like to keep making these movies. Maybe that isn't a gay relationship. I think they would have shut it down way quicker than it is possible, you know, to do today. So I think that alone shows that kind of the politics of the times are reflected in these movies. And as you're saying, is it about privilege? Well, I think it's inherently about privilege. It would have to be if that's kind of the conversations that we're having today. Yeah, I totally agree, and thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thank you, Will. I think that's a great point. Some of these questions, if this was 1977 or 1979 or 1981, even if the questions came up, is that a gay relationship in the film, or what does the diversity reflect? Would they land in a different way? Would our society have different kinds of conversations? Now, it's obvious we can't know for sure, but it's an interesting point, isn't it? It's a different sort of a different time. Or
I think they've been speculating a lot of things about like Star Wars over the years. I mean, just that they speculated that the series has pushed these boundaries that they really haven't been meaning to. I mean, even the whole Luke's strong feelings towards Leia before he finds out that it's his sister. Like, they've been doing things like this without ever like saying, no, that's not what we exactly meant to do. It just came off that way. But I don't...
So some of it happy accidents. Some of it accidents. Yeah, thank you, Will. And we have a different Will on line two. Go ahead, Will. How you there, Will?
Oh, yeah. Hi, I'm here.
Go ahead.
All right, you're talking about all kinds of diversity and stuff and how predominantly in the past we've had protagonists as white, straight males. And you've been talking about gender, you've been talking about race, sexuality now. And I was just thinking, if you have all the different genders and sexualities and races up on a board and you throw a dart at it, it's likely not going to land on a straight white male. And so really what they're doing is just making it more realistic. And it's interesting that realism is bringing up such controversy.
That's a good way of putting it. Thank you, Will. I mean, what all Will is observing is that's the world, that there's plenty of diversity in the world, and that if the world makes people uncomfortable, yeah, that's a really interesting way of putting it.
If you're arguing that the women cannot be the hero of a movie, you're not arguing for reality. You're arguing for what you want to see.
Well, let me also say about Carrie Fisher. I'm seeing in a number of places shared about her, and I'm going to go ahead and read a quote that I think is from Carrie Fisher because I've seen it shared in so many places, but this is one of those that I hope it's not fake news. But a lot of people pointing out that Carrie Fisher was not just an iconic actress, but she was a powerful mental health advocate. And the quote that I'm seeing in a number of places from Carrie Fisher is this, quote, "I am mentally ill. I can say that. I am not ashamed of that. I survived that. I'm still surviving it, but bring it on," end quote. That's from Carrie Fisher. And so, again, I hope that's really Carrie Fisher, and maybe Megan Mack can fact check that for me. Go ahead. Thanks, Meg. But I've seen it in a number of places, and that's, again, I hope that's real, because that's a really powerful and strong quote from an actress who passed away today.
Carrie Fisher is a hero off screen as much as on. She has battled, a mental illness, addiction. This has been kind of hard for this hour, even for the past couple of days, not knowing what was going on with her. Like I said off air, I met her a couple of years ago, and she's very, at least my impression was, she was very genuine. She's very honest about what has affected her in her life. I won't say what she said to me on air, but I don't know.
Well, it's been an emotional hour for a lot of people learning that Carrie Fisher has passed away. We've got a few minutes left with our Star Wars fans, so let me just ask them going forward now, in this series specifically, I'm curious to know if this is a series that's going to get, going to make millions and millions and millions of dollars, no matter what happens, because that's what happened with episodes 1, 2, and 3, and everybody wanted to like them, and confirmation bias was strong. Confirmation bias is like its own force, and the confirmation bias was strong with this one. But then you kind of had a little time go by, and you realize that the prequels were sort of a disaster, and the question then becomes, should it be a cyclical kind of storytelling where it always comes back to, sort of parental issues, and you have to resolve that, and then parents pass away, and then the next generation comes on? Or do we need new storylines? Some have said, why do we keep it in the Skywalker family? The Star Wars is part of a big universe, and there's more stories out there. And I'm wondering, obviously we know in general where we're going in episode 8 and then probably 9. But I'm curious to know how you feel about that and what you'd like to see as fans. So, Willis, I'll start with you. Episode 8 coming out in about a year. What do you want?
Well, even though we're not liking to hear it, like you said, there is so many other stories out there. They are working on a Darth Maul comic book, and I'm excited about that, to learn the backstory. Some of these characters have already passed away, that how they got to where they are now. As far as it concerns with the Skywalker family, I don't know, maybe it's just me personally, but I get excited when I learn about these relations to these other characters that I've been learning. And
so Rey and Luke, that's exciting.
Yeah, and Kylo Ren, I've been excited by every story. So I wouldn't mind if it, like you said, it's going to continue to make money no matter what. So I'm going to keep watching no matter what happens.
Okay, Tiffany?
Yeah, and I'll keep watching, just like Willis says. But I am so invested in these characters. I'm so attached to them. That's why the Force Awakens was so exciting for me, because it was a continuation of those people that I grew to love. And now we're starting to learn about their children. The Kylo Ren character, I was ready to not dig him. Kind of like Darth Maul for me was like, I'm done now, after a while. But Kylo Ren, I mean, he's an incredible actor. The performance was awesome. It was so deep that I want to learn more. So I'm fine with whatever they want to throw at me. I mean, they've been talking about doing an Obi-Wan, kind of prequel, and then a Boba Fett prequel. I'm all about it.
Yeah.
So I'm good with it.
Okay.
So this is the first time we haven't had a Skywalker movie. It's still kind of a Skywalker-adjacent movie. the plans going forward are still, you know, Skywalker adjacent, but eventually we're going to run out of time. There's only 19 years between episode 3 and episode 4, and you can only do so much in that time. We already have one movie, a TV show. This Han Solo movie
do
will take
Do you know
place
how
in that
money
time.
Works in Hollywood? They will never run out of time.
Well, I mean, it's you know, eventually we're going to have to move into another point in Star Wars and at okay. least focus on a different time period. If yep. it's a prequel, or, I mean, we can, 30 years from now, we can have Daisy Ridley doing a sequel to the sequels, but.
I will say this about Darth Maul. You know, you mentioned you want more of the backstory. The reason I think that he was a fun villain but totally underdeveloped is he was totally on screen to be the coolest lightsaber fighter ever, and he was. It was awesome. Yeah. Those fight scenes were great. But you got nothing but snarling, bad teeth weirdness yeah. from him. There wasn't anything real. And that's not real storytelling. That's just cool fight scenes. So I think that was another place where episode 1 had a misstep. And when it comes to Adam Driver, you loved Adam Driver in 7.
Yeah.
I what I fear is I don't want him going down the Anakin petulant teenager road. I don't want him going down that why me, and you know, like I'm upset and I'm going to be bad now. I mean, like I don't think we're going there. But you know, essentially that's what we got from Hayden Christensen.
Yeah,
and I'm hoping that, but you're confident we're not going there.
I think this guy's a much better actor. I think the writing is much better. I think I'm just more invested in him. I'd want to see where this goes. Yeah. I enjoyed him very much.
And, you know, frankly, darkness of leaders. You know, we saw a little bit more of a darker Darth side in Rogue One. You got to see just little glimpses of it. They're supposed to be dark. I mean, he's supposed to scare you, not give you dad jokes. So anyway, I want to thank our panel for covering a wide range. On the day that Carrie Fisher, the news coming that Carrie Fisher passes away at the age of 60, we talked Star Wars this hour. But that confirmation just coming down. So our thanks to the panel, that's Willis Brooks and Tiffany Starpoli and Eric Stevens. Thank you all for being here. Great talking with all of you.
Thank you.
Rob Braden's the engineer. Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you have a lovely afternoon. And we'll talk with you Wednesday on Member Supported Public Radio.